For children with imagination, the world of the Micronauts. Spacemen, robots, vehicles, some with magnets, some with batteries, and all with interchangeable parts, so your child can create dozens of different toys.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Pod Stallions. I'm Brian, and that guy next to me is Jason.
Hello, everybody.
And we've got a special guest today, actor-comedian Chris Tallman. Hello, Chris.
Hi, guys. How are you?
And it's kind of a cool episode today. We're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects, and that is toys, specifically the pretty trend-setting toy line of the 1970s by Mego, one of my favorites.
Armstrong. Here we go. Let's get it.
Now we're gonna get emails.
Sorry, I ruined it.
The interchangeable world of the Micronauts,
ooh,
which many of you may remember.
I do.
You do?
Sure, I do.
That for those
that was my idea.
For those that don't know the history of the Micronauts, they were actually came from Japan. They were developed by a company called Takara, and are in a weird way the kind of like offshoot of Captain Action, in that Takara had their own version of Captain Action and they spun it off calling it Henshin Cyborg. So it was a clear cyborg type doll that you put costumes on.
Ooh.
And when the Patrol, it was a 12-inch doll. So
would
they
it come with like faces or different heads or
costumes based on popular Japanese TV characters.
Wow. Cool.
I got a bunch of them here. I adore this line, but unfortunately when you try to buy them in Japan, it's still a highly collectible line in Japan, so you just get beat up all the time.
Mm-hmm. Do you have one that's a favorite?
Yeah, I would say my Kamen Rider 1.
Oh, cool.
Because I really
and you have a bike?
No. Well, oh. Henshin Cyborg did, but not the Kamen Rider suit, no.
But wait, okay. What is the direct relation between the Henshin Cyborg and, because weren't those more like Mego size, most of the Henshin
Cyborg? They were 12-inch tall.
They were 12-inch, okay.
And
so
I think there was a prohibitive cost measure in the early 70s with the price of petroleum. Mm-hmm. So they were looking to kind of spin it off, and they developed Microman. And if you look at Henshin Cyborg and you look at Microman, you can see they're related. It's a clear cyborg-like figure, silver head, you know. And they developed the, and I'm not an expert on Microman, but I know enough about it that a lot of the R&D that you see in the first waves of the Micronauts, that's all Microman product.
That so, they've just relabeled.
Yeah, and it was an expensive line to produce, so Takara sent out to, you know, other countries to kind of develop, you know, see if they wanted another, like, you know, an American company wanted to join in on producing these toys. And it went through a company, I believe, called Cal R&D, which was in California. And that's where Mego, Marty Abrams, and Neil Kublin first saw the Micronauts line. And then they flew to Japan and they cut a deal to license the property. And, of course, once Mego had it, they made it theirs. You know, they had a really great art staff and a marketing team, so mm-hmm. You know, the name the Micronauts, and even that, this is one of the things I remember from interviewing folks at Mego, was the black packaging they created for the line was everyone was told, don't do black packaging for children's toys, which of course Kenner also ignored, and now mm-hmm. It's kind of a mainstay, but it was kind of trend setting for the time. And it didn't hurt that the Micronauts launched in, I think, you know, early 1977. And, you know, here we've got these lines of space toys just as a certain movie hits.
And well, can I just jump in? You know, actually, go ahead, Chris. If you're talking,
I was just going to ask. Isn't there a story about Mego missing the boat on Star Wars and Micronauts sort of being their attempt to kind of get back into it? Is that right, or is that timing wrong?
There's a lot of it is true, but you know the two greatest misconceptions, things that really bug me when I read anything about Mego. Is the somebody will surmise Mego passed on Star Wars and it put them out of business, which isn't true.
Right.
The other thing, they did pass on Star Wars. But it's because, and I honestly can't do the timing perfectly, although I was sitting next to Marty Abrams once and Neil Cublin, and they were kind of talking amongst each other. And Neil said, I thought so-and-so passed on Star Wars. And I just remember... Marty turned to him and said, no, it was, and I can't remember the name, but it was said just dripping with contempt.
Wow.
You know, so they would have, and Neil Cublin told me personally, he said, we were grabbing every science fiction license to protect the Micronauts.
Okay.
So they, you know, they grabbed Logan's Run that year. They grabbed Flash Gordon. I forget what else they grabbed. One.
Can I jump in with another question?
Yeah.
That's along these lines. My understanding always was that, by saying that, if someone just says they passed on it and that's what killed, you know, Mego, that's not accurate. My understanding, and tell me if this is more accurate, is they passed on Star Wars. Star Wars became huge, but then, sort of trying to keep the lightning going, they then said yes to a number of properties, film properties that. Everyone was kind of hoping we're going to be the next Star Wars, which was, in no order, The Black Hole, Buck Rogers in the 25th Century, Moonraker, and... Rollerball. What was the other one? What was the fourth one?
Black Hole, Star Trek, The Motion Picture,
Star Trek, and
Moonraker. Now they were not hits. Although Buck Rogers,
right. So is it
Buck Rogers was a hit for Mego.
But by doing that and those things not particularly being hits, did they take a hit with the licensing for that and the amount of leftover merchandise, et cetera, et cetera? And did that start to hurt them where they eventually... you know, hit the bad times.
It's because, much bigger than that. Everyone wants to just think of them as an action figure company, but you know, you got to understand during that time, they were selling hundreds of millions of dollars worth of Micronauts and superheroes. So they weren't hurting because they didn't have Star Wars. It didn't help, but they were also, you know, they were doing dolls. They were doing, I think Electronic Games was really one of the bigger nails in the coffin. Mm-hmm. They were investing millions in that in R&D. It was late 70s. Inflation was insane. And then, of course, there was a scandal in the company, and Marty Abrams was replaced. And somebody once told me that when that announcement came in, you know, in a movie, like in a 1940s movie, after the reporters all come out of the courtroom, they all storm the payphones?
Yeah.
That's what it was like when the announcement came that Marty Abrams was being replaced. Everyone went to their cubicle and started looking for work.
Have you guys discussed that before, the replacement of him? Because I don't think I'd heard that before.
No, I mean, you know, at the Mega Museum, we don't tend to really dwell on it.
Got it.
But we do have articles about it and that sort of thing. But no, it's not really a high point, and not a lot of people want to talk about it in interviews, that sort of thing. But it's public knowledge that happened.
Can you say what it was? It was a scandal.
It was a scandal. It was involving... I think it was involving a few
personal life stuff.
No. The company was
the mob. It was the mob involved.
I think that's what it, I don't have it in front
of
me.
Oh,
but
oops.
Well, somebody once told me who was outside of Mego that they felt that it was really unfair that Mego got nailed because he said every single person, every single toy company had to do that.
Okay.
So it wasn't, and it was, I think it was like $20,000 or something like that. It wasn't, you know, millions of dollars. It wasn't this huge fraud case. They decided to make an example of Mego. No, nothing to do with the Micronauts at all.
It wasn't the Watergate break-in.
No.
Oh, you haven't heard that?
I don't know. I knew there was always a missing link there, and I thought maybe Deep Throat could have been somebody from Mego.
It was Action Jackson.
It was Action Jackson.
Yeah.
Of course.
See?
Of course. So he stepped out, and so you're saying that kind of rocked.
Well, like, what they brought in was like Mego was a highly creative company. People right. wanted to work there. They came fresh out of high school or college, and you know they loved working there. And you know, look at all their output in the late 70s, and you can see that there was a real joy in it. And then as soon as you look around 1981, even the catalogs, which I have here, there's just kind of a, you know, I think what happened was too is somebody told me that the new acting president was like on accounting side. So he started restricting funds. Somebody once told me that they had to build Toy Fair prototypes in their basement on the weekend because there was no money, no time.
And it's interesting because particularly with restricting creativity, that's one of the things I think I always responded to so much as a kid to Micronauts was they were a cool design, sort of like a Star Wars thing, but because they were interchangeable, there was a whole imagination factor there that wasn't with any other toy.
Yeah.
Like it really was sort of, and there was very little mythology up until the comic book. There was really no story behind the characters. I think early on they kind of said, like, a Croyer is evil, and everybody who looked human, I assume, was good. But other than that, there really wasn't your imagination really was filling in who these characters were and what the story is. Because there was a certain amount, like, with, like, the Pharaoh character, you started getting into, like, Egyptian mythology rather than tiny spacemen. Like, it really kind of moved around as far as what the story of these characters were.
Yeah, like you really made your own story, and that was pretty common, and like pretty common in the 70s to not, you know, that's more of an 80s thing to, you know, give the kid every little bit of detail. Mm-hmm. This is the bad guy, this is the good guy. But you know, a lot of toy lines, Big Jim, G.I. Joe, you really didn't have this great concept of who they are and what they did.
But even with G.I. Joe, you kind of got, because of its association with military, and yeah, a lot of those toys also kind of have, like, it came with like an inflatable raft toy. Like, and there was sort of a story provided with True. That particular set.
Yeah, you're right. The Micronauts, they really, there was another toy line just around the same time as Micronauts called Metal Men. Do you remember it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they did the same thing. They just, you know, these are robot guys.
But see, let me jump in real quick, because you mentioned the Ferroid with Time Chamber or whatever.
One of my favorites, yeah.
One of the coolest toys ever made, one of the coolest action figures ever made. In my, you know, 7-year-old brain, he was a time traveler. I didn't know much about it. I just knew he was a time traveler. And because even at that point, I'm starting to watch Doctor Who.
I did the same thing as you.
He could go into the Ferroid, you know, coffin chamber thing and travel anywhere. And he could be that character that pops out anywhere. What I would start to notice with some of these things was almost like little Easter eggs. Like, you know, some toy companies do this now. Like, actually, speaking of Doctor Who, Character Options does this just in a small way, where if they make a electronic TARDIS or an electronic sonic screwdriver or what have you, they give you the instructions. But what they don't tell you is if you press the button 4 times in a row, you get a 4th sound. If you press it 5 times in a row, you get a 5th, up to like 9 sounds. So you're looking around and figuring it out on your own. Oh, I love that stuff. And they do it with a lot of their product. But the Micronauts thing, I kept trying to find hints or things, or like the little things, the two little gold things that went on the side of his legs.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I could use as guns as well. Those must be his, you know, primitive or whatever weird form of guns. But there's also on the face of the chamber, the little bit the face of the chamber is on the thing in the middle of his chest. That he's got the same face as on the chamber, right? Like like an Egyptian kind of thing.
I think so.
I thought, you know, that's got to lead to some other story, or maybe the next guy's got something different on his face. And didn't they kind of do that with the really cool ones like Membros and
Those were not developed by Takara.
Okay, great, because I want to hear about them, because those were my favorites.
By the way, I just want to get off on a tangent, although it's completely subject related, is that sarcophagi thing, they do it in Japan like crazy. They have a Lady Command series where it's female Micronauts and they're little Statues of Liberty.
Oh yeah,
one of my favorite sets, I parted with it and I wish I hadn't, was Easter Island Heads.
What?
Oh, I've seen those.
Yeah.
I think I had one of those. It's like light blue. It was like a baby blue Easter Island.
I had a multicolored set when I I think I moved and I sold it. Now
I still have my original Feroid with
Chamber. So do I.
From way back. He's the cream colored one. And then as I got older, I found like a red or a blue one or whatever when those reissues. We'll get to that. But my other question was, so I have this world in my brain that for some reason I can't tell which came first, in not in the world, but for me. If I was playing around with Micronauts before I saw Star Wars or right around the same time and then gravitated toward Micronauts. So when did they sort of hit – branded as the Micronauts, when did they kind of hit the U.S.?
Mego debuted them at Toy Fair in 1977. And by the time it was Christmas, they were all over the place. I first remember seeing them back to school shopping with my mom.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea what this Star Wars thing was yet. And I bought the Photon Sled. I remember
that.
Yeah. I actually have a Photon Sled in the Canadian packaging.
Do you really?
Yeah, because I had to have it.
Some of those vehicles are just the best.
Yeah, the wind-up motors. That's one of the things I wanted to talk about was Micronauts. You touched on it, Chris. Were like Lego in the way that you could interchange everything.
Right.
And if you remember the TV commercials, even the TV commercials were a bit strange because they weren't two kids playing with Micronauts in the backyard. It was like a showroom, and they'd have this dude in a turtleneck come out and go, "The Micronauts." You know, he'd usually be dubbed. And he clearly
kidnapped two children to get them to market a toy.
Well, and they have to explain, you know, it was almost like, you know, you kids have to understand how cool this is.
Or you'll die.
Yeah.
I like it, yeah. He was like a spy from the toy world.
Yeah.
Let me tell you a little tidbit about my first experience with Micronauts because this is where it gets really. Yeah, I was in a bar in New Orleans.
Organ is not as expensive as you think.
Next thing you know, I got a bucket full of Micronauts. this is going to sound hard to believe, I know, but something I associate very, very strongly with the summer of Star Wars, which is summer of 77. Before everything started to hit, when it was just, you know, the Marvel comic and puzzles, etc. I might have said this on one of our episodes because I don't remember. I don't know. But we would go – my dad, my two brothers, and a few cousins, whatever, would go up to a place called Breezy Point Resort in Minnesota. I don't know what this thing was. I know there was entertainment over there. Oh, someone's singing in that lounge over there tonight. And whatever. But this is – but truly, this, you know, when you watch some of the old Bill Murray – Nick the Lounge Singer with Paul Schaefer, he'll go, "It's so great to be back up here at Breezy Point." And it's, you know, that's where we would go to these places. And my brother came back from a trip to the market, tossed me a Marvel 3-pack of comics, which was the fourth, fifth, and sixth of the adaptation. And then there was a kid right next door that had all these Micronauts, and he was going down to the river to put those round things in the water. You know, the ones that kind of floated?
The round things.
Yeah, weren't there like Micronaut vehicles that you could like put in the water?
Yeah, there was.
They didn't like move on their own, but they were in the water. They were round.
There was the copter, hydrocopter, which was like a bubble.
And there you go.
Oh, yeah.
It was made to. I totally messed that up. I remember mine just started to leak, and
I remember that, and I knew it. And I had a couple of Micronauts, and I saw this kid, and I thought, oh, he's got to be rich, this kid, because he had like five. He seemed to have every Micronaut toy out on the lawn, the front of this, you know, hotel room that they'd booked or whatever, his family, and he was always down by the water with this, you know, mini sub or whatever it was. And I thought, man, if I just grabbed a couple of these, he would never notice. But I was, you know, I was seven, so cut me some slack. If it was today, I could have done it. I could have taken a couple of things, but I wouldn't. But that's my one of my earliest memories of Micronauts.
You're pretty sure that today you could steal from a child?
I think so. I mean, okay, A, I'm pretty fast. B, I can distract them with, you know, shiny stuff over there in the corner, whatever.
Right.
And see, I'm a little bolder than I was when I was seven. So, yeah.
You know, in today's climate, it's just fair game on children. There's no repercussions.
Oh, man.
No, of course not.
Guys, which one of us hasn't just gone wilding on a child? Yeah. Like, that's just, that's a thing you do as a grown-up. You find a group of kids, take their lollipops, and just throw dirt at them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know what? It did mean no harm.
I could tell.
I would not be the man I am today if it weren't for such things.
I don't remember any Micronauts going in the water, but I do remember what you were describing, sort of the look of them as being sort of like several of them had, they looked like they should float, like some kind of like ship that had like a ball as a thing. But I kind of remember
the hydrocopter.
Yes.
Was that what it was? A hydrocopter?
Yeah, okay. And it could be used on land or water, and it had little paddles.
What?
Yeah, it had little paddles, so you could put it in the water. I said, mine failed, and not only that, but I think I remember mine got rust. Like,
what?
I don't know if I had lived in a hard water area, but the bubble actually got, like, rust on it from, I don't know, I probably left it in the tub.
I hope you guys moved out of that town, because it's probably, like, one of those...
I could walk to my house.
You know, lawsuit towns.
Do you guys remember Aquatron?
Aquatron,
yeah,
that came out the
name.
Next. It was in series two, and it was like a yellow platform.
Okay.
That you could ride around in the water on it. It came with a little motor, like a little boat motor. I remember asking for that in Christmas of 77 or 78. I'm not sure, and because the commercial just made me crazy. My grandmother gave it to me on Christmas Eve. I remember I ran upstairs, filled her bathroom sink. And watched it move, you know, 6 inches.
That is something I remember about all of them. Like, the bigger ship also had, like, a remote control. But, like, the child's imagination, you hear a remote control, and you're like, oh, this is going to be amazing. But then when you actually see it, it goes about an inch a minute.
Yeah.
Like, it physically moves. You can't argue that it doesn't move.
Right.
But nothing like speed. Nothing approaching a spaceship soaring through space or anything like that. Yeah.
That was the, what was that? The battle cruiser? Was that what it was?
Yes!
Yeah, that has the coolest feature where you can pop a figure and it slides down into the cockpit.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? Like you sit at the top seat and you press the button and it... And weren't the sides of that guns?
That is why I think I was so drawn to it. We were not allowed to have any kind of toy guns when we were kids. I remember seeing, first of all... Again, it's sort of following Star Wars, just a gigantic ship. It was huge.
Yeah.
Couldn't you fit multiple figures into that thing?
Yeah, there was four. I think there's three cockpits and then like a command seat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what I remember, like the wings, like looked like wings, but they had sort of a built-in rubber tip dart.
Yeah.
But the wings came off, and as soon as you like shifted them 90 degrees, you realized... This is nothing more than a plastic weapon. This is a gun with a little hook so you can disguise it and make it look like it's a spaceship, but it's actually for taking out your brother's eye.
If you guys ever want to get jealous of someone else's childhood, I can send you the links for the Microman commercials. Not only are Japanese toy commercials way better than ours, but everything shoots missiles. Like, absolutely everything shoots tiny little missiles.
Well,
Do they have the plastic rubbery heads? Because that's what I remember about Micronauts. They had like a huge safety-conscious thing, right?
Yeah, Mego did that.
That was after the fact, right, Brian?
No, it wasn't actually. Mego never did tiny missiles.
Okay, so Mego had those big. It was like a gun turret that someone would sit behind. Almost that's what it looked like.
The other shot two red.
Yeah,
yeah.
But the other little missiles. I mean, that was the rage out of Japan from the 70s, these amazing toys that shot missiles like across the room.
Everything shoots missiles.
Made its way over here, and that first range of Shogun Warriors and those Japanese ships and everything else came with these great little red missiles.
Yep.
And, you know, last time we talked about this...
You got in trouble.
I made a slightly off-color, you know, offhand...
Wait, hold on. Jason, you made an off-color remark?
It's rare.
Huh.
I did. I made an offhand comment about why everybody else had to suffer because of what one kid did with those little missiles.
When you say you got in trouble, what people complained?
Oh, we got, you know, people were, you know, egging my house, threatening my life, stole my dog.
People storming the Pod Stallion studios?
Storming the we were barricaded in for a good week after that episode.
Down, beautiful downtown Burbank. Yeah,
it was like assault on Precinct 13. You know, so I'm not gonna make that joke or play it light. But something bad happened, and then like instantly, all the stuff got recalled, and they redid and they put stickers on the packaging and said, just so you know, whatever you're looking at on the box is not in here. It's a different kind of missile.
And if you sent in those missiles, they sent you a Hot Wheels car. Do you remember that?
Not like you just hum that at someone's head if you wanted to.
Yeah.
But the missiles, these things were they were purpose built, made not to be missiles, like not to fly like an inch out.
Not to take out an eye, you know.
Not to take out an eye. But that's what
one of my favorite vehicles that has those missiles is called the Star Searcher by the Micronauts line. It looks like an SUV from outer space.
Hey, wasn't that the name of the ship on the second season of Buck Rogers?
It was. And
isn't it sad that I fucking know that?
Well, you want to even know something even sadder that's totally correlating to this?
Sure.
Is Mego took Micronauts vehicle, not the Star Searcher itself, but another Micronauts vehicle, which is not gonna was. I'll have to get you the name, and they repackaged it under the Buck Rogers brand because this is how.
Oh, I know what you
bankrupted ideas they were at the time.
Yes,
and they called it the Star Searcher.
And it's got like, does it have the one with the claws?
It's the one with the claws, and for the life of me, I can't remember what it was called.
It was called Buck's Hot Tub Palace.
I have the thing, and it's hilarious. It's, you know, it's the
Buck's Leather Emporium, Buck Rogers Hair Chest Emulsifier.
You have a mighty
hair chest.
Hair chest.
He called it a hair chest. All right,
huh. Are you keeping that?
I'm looking at a picture of the Star Searcher right now. Was this the one? The vehicle that came apart, like it became like if you want, you could separate it, and it would be two different vehicles.
I think everything was that. Gosh. Basically at that level. Yeah,
I'm having crazy waves of nostalgia, like looking at this picture and going, "Oh, that's the reason I love these things is because they told you, oh yeah, it looks like this, but your little kid brain be like, yeah, but man, as soon as I get a." You know, I'll put Cobra Commander on that thing, and then we'll have Walrus Man over here. Like, no.
That was the other magic thing about the Micronauts is everything went 3¾. They were one of the first, but by the end of like 79, everything was 3¾. So it all kind of worked. And Mego smartly was trying to play that, like the Mego world of action figures. There's some spots they did where they just put Buck Rogers with Black Hole and Star Trek. You know, they were just trying to say, hey, aliens, cross it over, you know?
Yeah.
But I was anal. I never did that.
That was my main thing, was just finding the four or five figures I liked from each line, putting them all in a pile, and then saying these are the good guys today and these are the bad guys. Yeah, but so, the Micronauts vehicles are so cool. God,
Ryan, sorry. Are you saying you didn't mix characters?
I was weird that way, yeah. I also was one of the early... This is not something I'm proud of, but I was like one of the, when we were playing Mego Superheroes, I'd be like, well, Iron Man and Superman can't meet.
Oh!
Yeah, I got into that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did your parents, like, did they think something, they should check you in somewhere, or like...
It was the 1970s, kind of, I was out playing, they had no
that
idea.
That kind of anal retention at like 8 or 9 years old.
Yeah, I got over it. I grew to be quite a slob, but... you know, when I think about it, I shake my head now. I was pretty uptight.
No, I love it. It's kind of brilliant. It's like, I wonder how many kids, if the kids, the grown-up kids that exist now had existed way back then for all these things, or the Star Wars stuff, or the sculpts, or what they would, the world would have gone crazy over the fact that Luke Skywalker's lightsaber was yellow, basically, and his hair was yellow.
As yellow as his hair, yeah.
Had there been an internet, it would have melted.
You know, you and I always joked about making that blog.
Where we should do that.
A toy reviewer in the 1970s. You know, nice try, Mego, but, you know.
Yeah. So, I like you, I'm sure you were waiting for the Star Wars action figures to finally come in the mail. And all I can say is I am so disappointed. A vinyl cape for Leia? And she doesn't wear a cape? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. It writes
itself. They would have been there. Yeah, they would have been there.
They had a lot to say about the lack of female figures in that Star Wars line.
Well, there was the one.
Well, there's Leia, Snaggletooth.
Oh, is
Greedo.
Snaggletooth a girl in your world?
Oh, in all of our world.
Oh.
Snaggletooth, Greedo, Lando Calrissian, all proud female characters. And
I think that a little known fact, I think Nine Numb is actually bi.
Oh.
Although he may be Q, you know, okay. Question. But it's not, he hasn't fully come out, so to speak, to tell everyone, but I think he's, you know, he can kind of do whatever he
now,
wants.
Now, is that fan fiction or is that like an established novella you read? Because I remember, I'm not.
No, that's just.
Okay.
That's the worst of my fanfic. Most of my fanfic is about the two characters on the show, Voyagers.
Oh, yeah.
So that's, and it's.
John, I shouldn't share that publicly.
Yeah, I can. I've got a website that you can go to if I give you a code word.
Was it Minopalooz? Minopalucci?
Minopalooz, John Eric Hexum.
Hexum.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
You'll love it. You'll love it, Tallman.
Oh, really? Well, as long as it's about them traveling through time but not really doing anything, I think I'll really enjoy it. I think that'd be great.
I even remember the name of the thing they used. The Omniverter? Was that it?
Yeah, ooh.
Yeah.
Omniverter.
Let me ask you. Speaking of fiction,
yeah,
the Marvel comic was pretty seminal to all of this too.
Well, okay, I'm going to step back for a second here because you guys, I'm going to let you guys go round and round about this, as you know. But let me ask one quick question.
Sure.
When did those, that line I was talking about that I love, and I can't think of the name of the artist, but man, I'd love to have those as prints. But the you know, Membros and
the glow in the dark aliens came out, and I loved these characters.
Brilliant.
The first wave came out Christmas of 79 because my mom. This was the year, and this was the reason I discovered there was no Santa Claus. Is that walking to use my parents' ensuite bathroom? She had one of those closets with those, you know, those closet doors you can see through.
Oh yeah, with the slots.
Yeah, and you know, I'm a kid, and I'm watching their black and white TV in the bedroom. And I keep seeing this big Eaton's bag. Eaton's was a department store, and Eaton's used white bags, you know, big white bags, and all that Micronauts packaging was just shining through.
Ooh. You know,
and I saw Membros, Reptos, and Antron facing me for like a month.
That's why the toy company said don't use the black packaging.
That's right, yeah.
Little Bri-Bri was going to get his dream shattered.
Bri-Bri's reality. Well, no, I was pretty thrilled, but I was like, oh, I kind of gathered. But, you know.
You knew what you were doing.
I knew what I was doing.
But let me ask you this. So, because, again, I try not to look at stuff while we're doing this, like to cheat a little bit. But I remember the packaging. I mean, I remember saving the backing cards
those, rather than use the photograph. They contacted Ken Kelly. I've interviewed Ken before, and I've met him a couple of times. He could not have a nicer guy. He is famous for, I believe, Kiss Destroyer.
Yeah, that's right.
Manowar, which was, you know, during my 80s metal phase. And then he also did, because my buddy Mark, our buddy Mark, did the Presidential Monsters, some of the Presidential Monsters artwork.
That's cool. Oh, no kidding.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, I think he's working. I think Jason Edmonston was one of the early artists, and then Ken is working with him on a go-forward basis.
Wow. Is he the guy who did the Hornetroid cover box? That thing, that's my desktop picture on my computer. I love way more than the toy.
Yeah.
Is the Hornetroid the purple one?
It's like a big wasp.
It's a ship.
So let's go down. Let's run this down. So there's Membros, which is the red one.
Yes, and he's probably my favorite. A lot of people,
and he's got like he's glow in the dark brain, got that big laser rifle thing on his one arm.
Yeah.
You've got who's the green one that looks like a pterodactyl?
Repto.
The purple one is called
Antron.
Antron.
Yeah.
Wait, the one that Tallman just talked about?
No, these are the characters.
Yeah. So
Hornetroid is a vehicle.
Hornetroid is a ship. Hornetroid is a
vehicle. Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
I thought one of those three guys was a super horny alien.
No. The aliens.
I beg your pardon.
language.
Sorry. I keep forgetting Tallman's on a Nickelodeon show.
Oh, right.
We should keep this as light as...
It's fine.
And I think I swore already on the show.
No, it's fine. Believe me, if there's any children listening who were this into Micronauts, they must have heard far worse by this point.
Yeah,
I mean,
and be 44.
Yeah.
So were they just the three then? Those three?
The first wave was just three and two vehicles, which is the one Chris mentioned, Thornatroid, which was the myriapod from the far-off galaxy of Thoraxid.
I knew it.
Yes.
What?
And the other thing they created that year was Terrafant, which was like an elephant tank.
Oh, I never saw that.
And what? I never saw this.
The box art for Terrafant is also Ken Kelly art.
And
that was another thing when I became a toy collector. It was like, I got to have a box Terrafant. Because I saw it as a kid, and that artwork was so fantastic.
But who was even coming up with names as cool as what you just listed off? For an original product. Were the monster thing, these alien creatures, was this based on anything prior to just being launched?
No.
I don't think so.
Original concept, original characters that came from the planet of blah blah whatever.
Yep.
Listen to those names. And what was the last vehicle? The Flop-a-Doo?
Terrafant.
Terrafant.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. And by the way, Antron was also from Thoraxid, so there was like a little connection.
Ooh.
Okay, so now I'm going to let you guys go here for a bit.
But let me finish the aliens, because
In
80, just before the Micronauts kind of rolled up, there were three more. Centaurus, which was a centaur from the planet Equestris. Lobros, which was a scaly creature from the deep oceans of Xenon, and he's got a brain in his mouth.
What?
Yeah, he's a
crustacean. Hey, I know that guy.
Yeah. And Kronos, the carrier of destruction with claws from the forbidden planet of Udinax. And he's like an insect character. And they were supposed to get more vehicles that none of them got released, or very little got released in the U.S. They got released in Canada and Italy. And that is Ampzilla, which is like a big Godzilla. That Repto was from Saurian. It was Repto's vehicle. Lobstros, which is like a tank lobster that was for the other guy, the guy with the brain in his mouth.
Can I guess what the third one is?
Sure.
Birdos.
Nope.
Good guess.
It's Sharkos.
Oh, God. You were so close.
I wanted it so bad.
Did the lobster tank, did it like shoot hot butter?
No, it's got claws, though. That's funny, though.
But it does have claws.
It has claws and tendrils. It is easily one of my favorite Micronaut vehicles.
See, and we talked about Japanese toys a bit.
These aren't Japanese, by the way. They're all Mego.
Yeah, I know. But we talked about Japanese toys 100 years ago, whatever episode that was. And I told you about the line of ARC diecasts.
Oh, yeah.
I still have my – it's by Billiken. Billiken? No, ARC. Who's the guy with the claws? He's got kind of a bird face.
Gigan.
And the missiles, because this is all around the same time. Like, I got that for a birthday, like a 7th or 8th birthday. My dad got me this ARC diecast figure and a collected book of The Incredible Hulk because the show was on.
Yeah.
But the diecast thing, I have not lost. Every single bit of it went back into the box, into the styrofoam thing that he was in, whatever. And it came with these missiles that were about, you know, maybe an inch long, these little yellow missiles. And one of them was a Gatling gun, was an accessory. And you turned it, and those missiles just shot across the room one after the other. It's amazing. But they like claws. They like the bird stuff. They like claws in a lot of this design.
You touched on something there too, and it's something I noticed as a collector. When I used to go to like the value villages and scour and flea markets scouring for toys, a lot of people treated Micronauts like they did with Lego in the fact that they kept the set in the box. You know, I can't tell you how many like Micronaut cities I would find with, you know, duct tape around them and at yard sales and that sort of thing. You'd open them up and you'd score a ton of figures inside too.
Now, what is that? You think it's because the people just...
It kind of had a construction set vibe to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you needed all those parts. I never had any of those sets, but I Wasn't there one that was sort of like a habit trail or something? That was sort of like tubes or something like that?
Yeah, I think there's like, a few different... Oh, you mean rocket tubes?
That sounds right. Yeah, holy smokes.
That's actually infamous at Mego because a lot of people say rocket tubes was sunk the Micronauts because it was their big thing for 79.
I remember wanting it.
So yeah. Mego made this rocket tubes thing?
Yeah, and I've talked to a lot of people from Mego, and a lot of people say that, you know, it worked in prototype, and then somebody switched the design from circular to more of a vent-type shape. And when they got it to Toy Fair, it didn't work. And one guy actually said, oh, we faked it. We put a vacuum pump in it, so it really worked. But the actual product didn't. I've also heard people saying something to the point that, you know, Mego should have put it in like a corrugated box when they shipped it, but they put it in a kind of a chintzier, thinner box, which damaged a lot of units.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, different stories. But the funniest one was I bought a whole bunch of Mego employee stuff, like stationery and internal documents and catalogs from this man.
Jars of fingernails.
And, well, nothing. Well, you know, almost.
Human hair.
I bought a photo album, which was weird. Yeah.
Sneakers.
But he worked for Mego, and he said, you know, he was kind of nice about it, but he was also kind of halting. And I said, can I interview you? And it was the worst interview I've ever done in my life. It was like, yes, no, and no, you can't use my name. So, you know, I was able to post something to the point of, oh, and the only time he ever elaborated or lit up was a way to kind of take a dig at Mego, you know, to say something like, oh, I worked for a real toy company. And I remember just kind of walking away from it going, huh, okay. And then in talking to other people who worked there over the years, they'd say, who else have you talked to? And I would say, you know, I would mention this guy's name, and I said, he's not real chatty. And one person finally said, oh, he took the fall for the rocket tubes. He was the guy they pinned it on.
Oh.
And he kind of has a right to be bitter because it's not his fault.
Yeah.
And, you know, he never said that. But... It was interesting to get closure on that, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of guys just, you know, up until that point, I don't think rocket tubes actually killed it. Like, you know, I know people that could tell you better. One of the people I really respect is a fellow by the name of Ray Miller, and he knows a lot about Micronauts.
And, see, I had heard when they tried to take it one step further and make rocket tube socks.
Yeah.
So they attached an engine to each sock, and these kids were – none of those worked, and they just fly around the room.
Yep.
That's mm-hmm. when I heard there were a lot of lawsuits, and it was time to wrap it up.
But I mean, those kids were – I mean, the kids were at least partially at fault, because if you split up a pair of – like if one kid wears one rocket sock and the other kid wears it, you're only going to spin.
You're only going to spin.
You're not going to get any air. Yeah.
And then, you know, frankly, if you sign the release to wear the socks – you know,
as we all did. Late 70s.
We all understood contracts well as a child.
I did. I was well versed, and I turned out just fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The
we miss you, Rocket Tube Socks.
I think the main reasons for Micronauts' demise is not what a lot of people would think it is. It's because they just kept sending out Series 1 and Series 2 when Series 3 was there. They kept like the back catalog of products, and this has been the death of a lot of toy lines. It was definitely something that crushed Big Jim and G.I. Joe earlier on in the 70s.
Well, but Brian?
Yes.
Well, can I don't mean I'm totally not trying to interrupt you, but just for the show, for a chronology, hold that thought. You guys should start talking now because you I think Tallman mentioned earlier the so in the midst of Micronauts mania or whatever, a comic book gets launched, and I know virtually nothing about this comic book. Like,
really?
Who launched it? How? I mean, I know it, but like the mythology within any, you know, famous names that were involved with it, and how long it lasted.
Was Sean Connery? I assume
Sean Connery was in it. It was in it. I knew that, mm-hmm. and I know J.D. Salinger had a run of like six issues. that no one knew about.
You know a lot about this, actually.
But other than that, that's pretty much it. So why don't you guys talk about that? Because you know I can go cook a roast.
Yeah. Well, for me as a kid, there was four comics that would take my allowance every month: Star Wars, Godzilla, Shogun Warriors, or the Micronauts.
Yeah.
Unless something had Hellcat on the cover, because I'd have to buy it, and I wouldn't know why.
Have you watched Jessica Jones yet?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. All right.
I would have liked to have seen Hellcat, but you know.
Season two.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. You mainly bought Little Lulu with your pocket money when you were a kid, right?
Little Lulu, Casper the Ghost, but before he became a ghost, when he was a kid.
Just when he was Casper. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Casper the inattentive boy.
Hot stuff. Yeah. Too spicy,
not Nancy,
right?
And Sluggo, but just like Sluggo stuff, but not Nancy.
Sure. Oh man, I'm a Sluggo boy from way back. I feel like Micronauts started with Marvel. Brian, I'm assuming it was some like deal that they had, like a Micronauts came to Marvel or vice versa,
I recall Bill Mantlo.
Right.
Maybe it was Bill Mantlo. I know he was instrumental in it. Somebody's kids got Micronauts for Christmas.
Okay.
And, you know, there was all these toys on the floor, and he thought, hey, I think there's a story here. Mm. And because there was no backstory, he pitched it, and they got the license. Mego was in New York, so it was Marvel. So they got...
Well, you know, speaking of the Micronauts, this is as good a time as any to tell this story, I suppose. Marty Abrams' son... who is called, what was he called?
Ken Abrams.
Ken Abrams, you know, this is about 5 or 6 years ago, maybe longer, maybe a little less. I don't remember anymore. But met up with myself and my business partners involved with Biff Bang Pow to talk about the Micronauts and other things that I think were kind of coming back into the family coffers or something. I don't know. Like they
own the brand.
Well, the day before we had had this lunch, the trades sort of made this announcement. In the trades, they'd made an announcement saying, you know, it's up, it's happening right now with Fox. It's going to be a motion picture. It's in development right now.
About Micronauts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
But again, you know how the trades are, Chris, because we live in the industry, you and I.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I mean? Like you see something, then you never hear about it again. I didn't know, you know what, I don't track the Micronauts, you know, movie to know if this is really happening or not. But he was talking about, well, he talked about, you know, where a lot of the names came from. That's where I think I got the first word about Baron Karza, where the name came from.
Marvin Azrak. Yeah.
Which I will let Brian tell if nobody knows. You know, this was, you just said, I can't believe no one has, you know, rebooted or done something. They've been trying to, I think. They've been trying to for ages.
Hasbro now owns the brand.
So Hasbro owns it now. So
you bought it from the Abrams a few years ago. They just announced, I guess I should have mentioned this.
Like a week ago, right?
Yeah, that they're going to make their own version of like the Avengers. Like everything's got to be interconnected now. Thank you, Marvel. Mm-hmm. And they're going to, I think it's Mask, G.I. Joe, Transformers, My Little Pony, and Micronauts are all going to be kind of part of this connected universe.
Isn't Rom in there somewhere,
yes,
too?
Yes, you're right, Rom. I supplemented My Little Pony.
I was going to say, because Teddy Ruxpin really got screwed on this deal. He's not in there, too.
He is in his hot tub. He is so upset right now. He's like,
strangling
the
Care Bear.
He's trying to that paw. He's trying to hit the phone with the paw, trying to dial some people, but...
Yeah, because I think of Rom and Micronauts being not toy-wise synonymous, but on the comic book side, like I think both time-wise and I feel like creators. I could be crazy. I wonder if Bill Mantlo did Rom as well. I feel like he really kind of at Marvel was handed a lot of the adaptation. Because didn't he also do like Sektars or?
Oh yeah, he did. He wasn't responsible for Rom. And I think even I picked up a Madballs comic once because I was writing an article for Topless Robot, and I couldn't believe his name was in there.
Wow.
You know, he really did end up just getting a lot of these kind of properties, but he was spinning gold with them because Micronauts lasted until about 83, and it actually became a – or 84. It actually became a a trade-only comic book, so it was only going to comic book stores. Like, Micronauts had disappeared from store shelves by this point, but the comic ran strong. They had a Micronauts X-Men crossover book.
I remember that.
And ROM lasted forever. I mean, ROM was off toy shelves in a day, but yeah. ROM went strong until the 80s, I think. And both of these titles have tried to make comebacks. There was a Micronauts comeback, and then, of course, the biggest problem now with it is Marvel owns the key characters of the Micronauts comic. They aren't.
They're not the toys, though.
They're not the toys. They own Bug, Arcturus Ran,
Marionette,
and you know. So yes, they can't show a Croyer. They, you know, if you make a Micronauts comic now, you could show a Croyer and you could show Baron Karza and Force Commander, but it can't be connected to that kind of Marvel universe.
That's too bad. And isn't that part of why? Because Bug,
he had a one shot,
but he was also part of the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
In like the last few, and was sort of part of the version that kind of got turned into the movie, but I think because of the Micronauts stuff, I don't even think the option to use him was available, right?
Well, no, Marvel can do whatever they want with Bug. The reason
they can't.
Yep, they own him outright. He has nothing to do with Micronauts anymore because he's a Marvel character. Of course, we all know him from Micronauts, but if they wanted to use him in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, no problem.
That would make me happy.
Yeah.
Can I just, on that note, can I sort of jump in here to this conversation if you guys don't forget I'm here?
It better be important, Jason.
Well, what I was going to say was, I was going to do two things. Let's do one before the other. Favorite Micronauts figure or favorite Micronauts thing. Let's let our guest star have the first go. Chris, what would you say was your favorite? You can do two. You can do two favorites.
Definitely Baron Karza. I would say of the toys that I actually had, I didn't have a lot. Baron Karza was my favorite. There was something about, because something I don't think we've quite mentioned is some of those toys were actually die-cast metal. And I think the ones I remember, yes. Baron Karza was all metal and his joints were all magnets. And as I recall, like pretty good ball joint magnets, or at least round magnets, so it had the movement like a ball joint, and you could take off his torso and put him on his horse so he could kind of become this centaur bad guy.
Yep.
Yes.
Both his fists and his chest had like a little bolt, sort of like Iron Man. They both had little triggers. He could fire his fists or his chest, and because everything was magnetic, you could make him into a monster. Like, you could put his head on his shoulder joint or whatever. I mean, you could
do
it on it. Like, that was,
and you could also mix and match with, they both had horses, Force Commander and Baron Karza.
Mm-hmm. Now
I still have my childhood Force Commander as BH on the feet. It's one of my,
now Chris,
yo,
do you know where the name Baron Karza came from?
I do not. I just assumed.
Ryan Hyler is going to tell you.
One Amigo's biggest competitors at the time was a company called Azrak Hamway, which was Ezra Hamway and Marvin Azrak. And the biggest shot across the bow they did was they hired away I forget his last name at this time, but they hired away the director of research and development, whose name was Neil. And
this other company did, or Mego hired it from their competitor?
No, this guy did work for Mego.
Oh, I see.
And it was not Neil Cublin, but it was there were two Neils in the business, and they hired him away to work for Remco, which was a division of Azrak Hamway. And of course, you know, he brought with him licenses, and AHI was kind of closely following Mego, and there was a bit of a rivalry there, and you know, it wasn't super pleasant. I've learned now that they're now friends. Everybody's all friends now, but The name Karza, of course, is Azrak spelled backwards.
And interesting.
The Mego crew also, Ray Miller found this. He went through the patents, and to protect themselves, Marty Abrams and Neil Cublin also copyrighted their names backwards.
Ooh. So
nobody could take a retaliation shot at them.
Isn't that great?
That's amazing. Yes. I love that as soon as, of course, they found that hole, they immediately plugged it up for themselves.
Yep.
Yeah.
No one's reversing my letters. Yep. Thank you. very much.
I will not be a bad guy.
So,
Force Commander and Baron Karza are amazing toys. And
they're great.
Did you know about this, Chris, that in Italy they created three more characters with that? And yep. superheroes?
That same kind of magnet?
Yeah.
No, yeah, what were they?
They created the Emperor, who is just sublime, and Red Atlas and Green Baron, which are just different variations on the armor concept. And
one was called Vito Corleone.
It's right.
These fall under Micronaut. A Micronaut title?
They were Micronauts. Micronauts were huge in Italy. Micronauti.
Micronauti.
And the company was called GIG that did them. And they also released...
Did they do the black hole things,
yes,
Brian?
They did. They did magnetic versions of the black hole robots.
Oh.
And
did they really?
Yeah. Ooh. And they did magnetic superheroes, Spider-Man, Batman,
yeah.
Hulk. You can actually take Superman's head and put it on Force Commander like he's unmasked.
Oh, that's cool.
And then after Ego went under... They also did a line called Il Fantinati that's like wizards and warlocks with that same appeal again.
Wow.
Yeah. They did a lot of cool stuff.
There's something about, because it's metal, like having that weight in your hand.
Yeah.
It a little bit reminds me, have you guys played at all with the, for Star Wars Force Awakens, you know, Disney Store has those.
Yes.
It's that same feeling in your hand. They're like heavier than a toy that you're used to.
Yes.
So it really has like this, there's something to it. And you move the joints around, you're like, ah, this thing's going to last forever. Yeah,
When I was in London, like in LA, I don't know about the rest of the country, but in anywhere Los Angeles, like anywhere I could find a Disney store, there's a waiting list to get these figures. They kind of look like the black series that's being done, you know, it's all retail. But they're a little bit taller, these die-cast ones at Disney Store. But the body, the bulk of the figure, the torso, maybe the head, I don't know, like the BB-8 that comes with Rey is die-cast metal. You can't find them. I mean, you literally can't find them anywhere. I go to London, walk into the store, and there is everyone, every single character.
Oh, wow.
And I just was like magnetically, no pun intended, drawn to the Vader and the Stormtrooper because it just those are the ones that just go, if I could have had those as die-cast figures when I was a kid, mm-hmm. you know, I would have killed to have them. It's a cool feeling having something. In fact, I saw something today, kind of the super deformed, you know, design, but they have put, I don't know the company, they put out die-cast metal Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman from Batman versus Superman, and they're kind of super deformed, but they're really kind of cool. But they're a figure that's total, you know, diecast. I don't think it has any articulation at all. But I just to see it in a toy aisle, I was so kind of knocked out. Like, wow, somebody's even proposing that as a toy line. I just think is so cool because it was everywhere when we were kids. We had everything was diecast. Our cereal was diecast metal. Breakfast cereal was die-cast metal.
It was delicious.
Brian, are you familiar with any of those newer ones?
I have not seen them, no.
You would kind of dig them. I got to say, you know, you're probably the last thing on your list to get, but the classic, you know, Star Wars Stormtrooper, the classic Vader, you know, they're the kind of things.
Take a look. I live nowhere near a Disney store. That's my big problem.
You could try the intraweb.
The intraweb?
Yeah.
Tell me more.
It's like a typewriter, but it talks to other people's brains.
Fantastic.
So are those your two, Chris? Would you say those are your two favorites?
Baron Karza. Well, the other one I mentioned before, the Hornetroid, I never had it, but I coveted it. I just, again, that artwork, I feel like it's better than the toy, maybe the way a lot of these old toys are. But like, I see that painting, I think I'm going to someday track one of those down. But I like, and I'm a big opener. I like keeping my, I like handling the toys and putting them on the shelf. But that one, I think I might just try and find a Hornetroid box or just, I don't know.
Well, the beauty of it is the box is super collector friendly.
Oh, it's such a beautiful thing. And that's the main thing I remember about this era, like in my like 6, 7, 8 years old, playing with stuff like this is that you would grab these toys and your imagination would just run crazy.
Yeah.
So the fact that I started playing with the Micronauts, and then after the fact, then the comic book came out, and again because of that Steve Ditko connection, I remember looking and going, Spider-Man's artist drew this. And the mythology, Jason, if you haven't read the Marvel comic book, it's, I would describe it, it's pretty similar to Star Wars. There is a evil galactic sort of whatever empire led by Baron Karza. Okay. And there's this small group of rebels led by a princess, Marionette. And she's sort of a, I mean, there's really nothing micronauty about her. She's in a multicolored costume. She's super acrobatic. Okay. She has a robot. Is that Microtron, Brian, that goes with her?
Yeah. Is it Microtron? Now you... Yeah, it was... No, I think it was Biotron.
I think Biotron was the robot that went with
Ron.
Arthur.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ron is sort of the Colonel Taylor of the series, in that he comes back like a thousand years and Baron Karza's taken over.
It does get kind of dense, right? There are a lot of characters floating around, and it's kind of...
I remember the one thing about that comic that blew my mind is I had an issue where a Kreuer takes his helmet off.
Right.
And he kind of looks like a Planet of the Apes character.
Yeah.
And it blew my mind. I didn't know he was, I thought he just looked like a guy under there, or he was a robot.
Well, like in an instance like that, did that then bleed over into the toy line? Was there ever a toy figure created?
You know, the only thing I don't remember anything ever doing that. What I noticed that they would do is Mego would send over what they were doing.
Uh-huh.
And they'd shove it in the comic, and sometimes it was weirdly disappointing, like the aliens, like Membros and Antron, they were tiny in the comic.
Uh-huh.
They were just like little they were the actual size of the figures. They were just armies of them.
Right.
They were minions of somebody.
They were the kind of comic, like, I kind of remember them as being almost like He-Man bad guys. They were sort of like, no, you know, they were Baron Karza's sort of bounty hunter flunky, like there was nothing really awesome about them. They were more sort of
I remember dumb. Seeing them as like hordes, like there was just hordes of them, and they had no character whatsoever.
Right.
Are these reprints? Like, can you get reprints of these, like in volumes, or do you just have to get the old comic?
Well, fortunately, you can get the comics, like the back issues, in dollar bins everywhere.
Oh, okay.
I can
sift through all the ads.
Of the things I scored at my local flea market that I love is a three-pack of the first three issues in a polybag.
Love those three packs.
I remember the guy just sold it to me for like $2, and you'd think I had bought a Stradivarius from the guy. I was so excited. he probably sold it. He could have sold, you know, it was probably worth 10. So I thought I'd really, really scored. You know?
You showed him.
Yeah.
Right. Go ahead, Jason.
No, go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
Well, I have a question sort of about, like you're saying, tying in figures to the comics. I remember one specific issue, and maybe it was this annual that I've been talking about. There was one of the Micronaut toys was one of the smaller die-cast figures, but it was a guy, I don't think it was in the first wave. He had a helmet and like a jetpack and a laser sword. He wasn't Space Glider, because I feel like Space Glider was kind of Arcturus Ran, right?
Yeah, I think that's Galactic Warrior.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
I feel like that character appeared in an issue, and like Jason, to sort of get to what you're talking about, things being dark, he had this helmet on him.
Galactic Defender.
He sort of would like fight them, and he was sort of like a Boba Fett. Like they couldn't beat him. And finally, out of desperation, they just take a pot shot and they crack his helmet. And there's sort of, and all of a sudden he falls down, and there's this sad reveal that he is sort of like Arcturus Ren. He's this guy who's been alive for 1,000 years because he's been in this sealed environment inside of his suit. And as soon as they like, so as they run up, you're like a vampire dying. You're seeing him atrophy from like a young man into an old, you know, crusty warrior into just dust. And I remember like,
sound like a couple of jerks for doing that.
I seem to recall the Pharaohs were treated way differently than I was hoping they would. Like, I thought they would be like Doctor Who in their time chambers, but they did something surprisingly different where they were just kind of ancient. I can't remember. There was something. They went a different way with it.
They weren't time travel vehicles so much as they were alone time vehicles. Well,
the thing, you know, the thing that changed in the 80s, right, is Hasbro would send a new G.I. Joe to Marvel, and Marvel would put that character in the comic for a year. Whereas at the Micronauts, they would, like Chris was saying, they would take a character they Mego had on every toy shelf, and they'd throw him in an annual, and then you'd never see him again.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And now that character's dead. Yep. No more stories with that new guy. Yep. Hope you liked him. Yeah, that cool guy with the rockets and the helmet and the laser sword and the gun? Yeah, no, he's dead.
Yeah.
The guy with all the accessories ever? Yeah, yeah. Gone. Done. Yeah.
So Mego was definitely just giving them artistic license to do whatever the hell they want.
Slow down production. Well, hey, speaking of Mego and artistic license and everything else, Mr. Heiler, what would be your two favorite pieces of Micronauts memorabilia toy?
You know what? I mean, I have some pretty rare ones, but I have my original Ferroid with Time Chamber that I bought. I conned my mom into buying on back to school shopping. At Byway, and I have my original Force Commander, like I said, with my name written on the base. And you know, I was lucky enough. It's kind of funny. I was at a toy show, and a guy had an incomplete Force Commander in the box, Canadian packaging with the Grand Toys logo. And I immediately, you know, bought it for $10-$20, slid out the parts. I don't know if I gave them away, and put mine back in the box.
Nice.
So I got to go with that. You know,
I did that once with the Kenner, you know, the 12-inch Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Which has got to be one of my top five toys.
I've done it a lot, but yeah.
Because I just, but it was one of the few things that I saved the box as a kid. Like, I saved that Ark diecast figure. Like, I don't know what, why, like the Shogun Warriors that I had, which, you know, I went into that black hole that moms, you know, throw them to. But I kept the boxes for those guys, probably because of all the gear that they had. But for some reason, I kept this box of Indiana Jones. And then years later, I found the insert in a crappy box. It was on eBay or something, and I did that. But I tell you, when you just said the thing about writing your initials on the – if you had a pristine, perfect packaged one and someone said they were going to take that one away, for some reason, even though it's the same piece of plastic, it would not be the same thing. Like it's not just the Indiana Jones figure. It's that's the one that was under my tree, you know, when I was 10 or whatever.
Yeah, it's the memories attached to it.
Yeah, totally. And so for me, it would be I've got my Ferroid with Time Chamber. It was like a cream color or gray one, right?
I think there's gray, red, and there might be tan, if I'm not mistaken.
Jesus, really?
Yeah. Well, it's like an off-white. No, wait, blue. Gray. Oh, wow. No, the tan one's on the card. There's actually never got rid
of. You know what I loved about him, too, is like, again, if you wanted to mix him in, mingle with other action figure lines or other action figures that you had at home, he didn't really have he could be anybody. You could make him up to be anything. And I loved his legs, like from the knees down, like the kind of, he looks like he was kind of wearing flares.
Well, and he's got little posts so you could stick him on vehicles.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the fact that, like, you know, if you did stick him in with your Star Wars figures, he's like, hi, I have more articulation than all of you.
Let me say this. Like I don't know when as a child, like, if I used the word Mego or if I said, like, oh, yeah, I knew Kenner. Of course, we all knew Kenner. But I don't know if I made the association with Mego. And if I did, I don't know if I made it with other, you know, action figure lines as opposed to the look of the 8-inch Mego figure. But I'll tell you, the day that I did kind of figure something out was when I got my Sentry from Black Hole.
Oh, and yeah.
He came with this little gun that didn't fit in his hand anyway. But his little hands, those little cuffs that stick on the end of the arm, those little cuffs and the hand was the Micronaut hand.
Yep.
And I recognized it right away and also felt ripped off because the gun looked nothing like the one in the movie. So, but that's for another show. So I'd say
I think you should steamroll right into that. Go ahead, lay it out.
Just get right under the black hole.
Well, let me lay down for this one.
Mego did a lot of that. Even the black hole figures and that whole O-ring construction was taken from the Micronauts.
But why didn't they just give T-Bone? Here's what I don't understand that pissed me off as a kid.
Did it piss you off?
No, it pissed me off that like the Star Trek the motion picture figures, the Buck Rogers figures, like the Star Trek ones had no articulation. The Buck Rogers ones had uber articulation. The black hole ones had uber. Nobody came with accessories.
Oh yeah, what drove me nuts about
I don't understand
the Buck Rogers figures had their guns, but you couldn't take them out of the holster.
They were glued in.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What a tease for a kid.
I worked my Buck Rogers figure so much that finally the glue gave out.
Oh.
So the gun in the holster kind of came up, but it still had it was kind of a square peg. So from that point on, I could kind of put it in his hand and then slide it back on. I remember thinking like, oh, it only took me a year to figure out that this was supposed to be here, right? I didn't break this. This is clearly an action figure that a feature that I figured out.
Well, the other beauty
of the
black hole figures was if you put Star Wars guns in their hands, their thumbs broke off.
Yep.
Speaking of Star Wars, because I'll tell you one little – you probably know this, Tallman, but you know I love it when like a little – I loved it when any kind of figure like had the gun that could like go in the holster or the knife could go in the thing or whatever. And you know Gabriel would do it with their like Lone Ranger stuff and Indy, you could put his gun in his holster. Even the Butch and Sundance from the early days.
Well, that's because they were built off – Indy was built off those figures.
Exactly. You could put the little rubber gun inside the holster, whatever.
Yeah.
You could never do it for Star Wars until like the recent, 10 years or whatever. But if you take the Empire Strikes Back Han Solo figure, the one in the snow outfit.
Yeah.
And, the midsection, like the cartridge of his gun, not the handle.
Yes.
And you put that slides into the loop on his holster. And it looks like he's kind of carrying it in his holster.
Ugh. See, stuff like that will keep me going for a month.
I was also very preoccupied that you could pop his head off.
Whose head?
You could?
Hoth Han. I think you could pop his head off pretty easy.
Hey, didn't Han go through enough in that film that he needs you popping his head off?
I mutilated mine, yeah.
And then I guess my second one would be the green Membros, the green
guy. No,
Membros was... Yeah, the red one. The green one was
Repto,
the one?
Repto had the red one, because the Repto had those cool bat wings.
Okay, well, did the red one, he had that...
He had a backpack with that really cool
energy
cord.
It had an energy cord that went from the backpack to the weapon.
Yeah.
I love that the weapon was, molded into his arm. I mean, it wasn't, but it felt like it was. And it could have been, what has he got back there? Is this a flamethrower?
Yeah.
Is it just... lasers, what's he shooting at people?
As a kid, I imagined that he sounded and made the gun sounds like the Martian war machine from the War of the Worlds movie.
Oh yeah,
nice.
Which I must have seen around that same time, and yeah, I loved.
That makes sense. And I'll tell you one more thing that I lusted after. And maybe I'm going to get this wrong. Wasn't there like a big? That big thing, that big robot that like was white and red and silver and a big head. Did we talk about it?
Biotron.
Did he come up in the conversation already?
Just in passing.
Okay, I wanted
him. The one with the treads on his back, Jason?
Yeah.
And you can put a Micronaut in his chest, right?
Yes, that was it. Because I'm getting it mixed up with the carrying case, but you could put a Micronaut in his chest.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the thing that I lusted after.
I always go on Japanese sites, and you see him in his even cooler Japanese packaging, where he's called Robot Man. And I don't have any connection, obviously, to the Microman stuff, but that is a slippery slope. It is.
Cool. What is that guy called in Japan?
Robot Man.
That's kind of hitting it on the nose.
Yep.
That's pretty. That's it, really. It's all you need, really. He's
and,
robot.
And we should,
Jason, what would you like to call him?
I needed a friend, so I would.
Oh wow!
I didn't have any friends, and he was just the right size to carry around. I was going to call him Chip.
This has been a real episode for sharing.
Wow! It's
Tallman. It's got to be Tallman because Hyler never asks me. Soul-searching questions like that. So,
well, you're clearly a damaged little puppy, and you need somebody to love you.
Yeah, yeah. That'll be the next episode. We'll talk about how can you love Jason.
I'm so
oh, the lawsuits. Nice. The lawsuits are rolling back.
I can't wait to read the YouTube comments on that one.
If we have anyone listening to this show...
Still?
This episode. Under the age of 35, I would be shocked. Do we? And that's not a dig. I hope we do.
Occasionally, my son listens.
Oh, that's your kid. He's advanced.
Yeah, but he doesn't have to listen to me. He's got front row access to me.
That's true.
Yeah,
it's true.
But does he have a Lobstros?
Well, he will. He's in line to inherit one.
Oh. Comes from a long line of Lobstros inheritors.
Oh, boy. Brian? Do you have a Hornetroid?
I do.
How do you just display it?
I have it in the box right now.
For the podcast.
Hugely personal
question.
Cut this part out.
Hornetroid was one of the first things when I started collecting Micronauts in college that I found. A guy had like three of them on his table for $10 each.
What?
Yeah. Well, this was 1992. And it was another one of those situations where I thought I'd really scored big, but it was probably worth $20 at the time.
Still, that's crazy. And then do you have now one, like, complete, like, with a box and all that?
Yeah, I keep it because what I'd really like to do is hang it from the ceiling. But I'm also, I'm 6'5", and this isn't a big room, so I'd end up, like, walking into it if I had it like that. So it'll have to wait for another place when I get a higher ceiling.
All right.
Someday. Well,
it's something to aspire to.
That's right.
You're a tall man as well. How tall are you?
I'm 6'1". I'm no Hyler.
You're no Hyler. I had a little song about you that time we had lunch, and I forgot it. Oh, I just remembered it. You want to hear it?
Do I?
No, I'm serious. You know,
sometimes.
What, Brian? Yeah, would you like to hear it?
I guess.
Well, it's like sometimes the name kind of fits perfectly into an established song.
Okay.
And I did it for some reason the song David Watts by the Kinks is great for Alex Ross, like wish I could be like Alex Ross. Anyway, so here's this Tallman was like
sorry, I thought you were saying fap 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 fap.
Chris Tallman, he's a guy who's really tall. Chris Tallman, he's taller than you.
I could do.
Yeah,
I love it.
That was it. It's just, you know, these things come to me sometimes. They could become a show. You never know.
You know, there's a reason they call you Song Maestro.
Do they? Is that what they're calling me around town?
Well, you got again, check the boards. You'll see a couple things.
Okay, well, there's more where that came from. If you like the Chris Tallman song, let us know, and more verses will be written.
Well, thank you. I'm very honored to be immortalized in song. Who doesn't want that? I think that's great.
Even though it's an old song, I changed the words for you. So
hey, that's a classic.
Thought that counts. Well, I hope this has been as fun for you, Chris, as it's been for me and Brian and everyone else who's listening.
It's a dream come true. I love this podcast. Every time I listen to it, I write a million things down that you guys talk about. Especially around the Halloween, you guys had like the countdown and stuff. So I now on like my Amazon, between my Amazon and like my YouTube, I think I have like 15 new movies that I have to watch because I haven't seen any of those. I just started watching Hammer movies because of you guys.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm happy to turn you on to that.
Hugely flattering, man. Yeah. Thank you very much. Oh, yeah. Very cool.
It's the best. This stuff is like every time you talk about something, or like Brian, when you say, "Oh, a Biotron's Robot Man," I'm just like, "Oh, I gotta look at that.
Look at Robot Man. Where's the Robot Man?" Yeah, but you're a busy fella. You got a lot going on. You're on a great show on Nickelodeon called The Thundermans.
Thank you.
But you do loads of other stuff, and you know you. What I was going to say is you're welcome back anytime. Absolutely. But I know you're a very busy cat, and. You do lots of podcast guesting as well. You're familiar with the podcast world, so that's a huge, very flattering to hear that from anyone, especially from a fellow like yourself. So.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And this totally flew by. I can't believe we're done. So it was a lot of fun.
Good, well done. Thank you for having me.
Thanks again. Anytime. Throw some topics at us, and we'll. I know where you live. So, well, I don't know where you live, but I know what city you live in.
We should talk about Maskatron sometime. When you guys did that Bionic Man one, and you got to Maskatron, I was so happy.
I could talk a lot of Maskatron.
In case Maskatron, we get you back, what topic would entice you to come back and be on the show again?
Oh my gosh. I'm trying to think of other. Have you guys ever done? Are you guys G.I. Joe guys at all?
I know about I'm friends with Larry Hama on Facebook.
But Chris, you're. I think we're. I googled your name today, and we're very close in age, like by 2 days.
Yeah.
So you're talking the Kung Fu Grip.
I'm era. Doing that, but I'm also the out of these Micronaut figures, like the early '80s G.I. Joe Real American Hero.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That hit a crazy sweet spot for me.
It did. You know what? That's funny you say that, because that it not only hit a crazy sweet spot for me, because I was like 11 when that came out, but it felt more grown up, that comic and the toy. Like, it felt sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
I got to ask you this. When that cartoon came out, were you a bit crestfallen?
A little bit, in that, like, the way they made everything into lasers.
Yes.
Like, it reminded me of the A-Team, where they all had guns, but like would just shoot and hit like mini tramps and just fly into the air. I was like, I don't think I wanted blood or violence necessarily, but like as soon as it became so cartoonish, I didn't like it. I'm shocked that movie-wise they can't really lock into G.I. Joe, because to me it's such a no-brainer. It's superhero army.
Yeah.
Didn't Larry Hama do the comic and write all of? He wrote all the cards in the back too, right?
Yeah. And
you know what it could be like if we ever did that. You know, Hyler, you can handle the 70s, 60s, 70s, whatever, like Kung Fu Grip stuff.
Oh yeah.
Tolman, you can handle the figures.
Gung-ho.
And then I'll handle the two.
Quick
films.
Kick.
I'll just
go off about my love for what's his name, Channing Tatum.
I was all in on those first 12 issues and the figures, and then it got too cartoonized for me.
Yeah, it got a little X-Men-y too, just in that, like, once they were so attached to the toys.
Yeah.
That it was, here's this new guy, and here's this new guy, and... It was like learning the mythology of the X-Men, where you're like, oh my god, there's 400 G.I. Joes.
Well, if you remember, Duke made his appearance on the cartoon,
right?
And I didn't like him. Like, I thought, who is this clown? Because I think it was General Hawk.
Yeah, Hawk. Because Hawk, he wasn't even a general at first. He was sort of like feel. Wasn't he like? Was he a general at the beginning?
I can't now. I can't remember. I just remember that first double-sized issue.
Yeah.
I was blown away about how good that was.
And again, wasn't that Michael Golden art who did so much of the Micronauts? Didn't Michael Golden do a bunch of G.I. Joe stuff as well?
I don't think it was Michael Golden. I'm not strong on artists, but I remember it being a very...
He might have done... Didn't G.I. Joe have that one thing where you met sort of the Russian counterparts of G.I. Joe?
The
like
September or October Guard?
Something like that. Maybe he did the art for that one issue. I don't know.
Maybe.
I have a strong association of him with
G.I. Joe exchange program.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they were, you know, it was the height of the Cold War.
Yeah,
I remember that. That was another one. It was just a really well... Herb Trimp did the first issue.
Yeah.
And... Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. I need, you know, they did a Treasury edition of that, and I need to pick it up because it's fantastic, and I want to relive that.
All right, well,
can I just jump in, because one of the other things you suggested, and if we could get you back, do this, I'd love it, because it's one of my favorite things.
I think
the Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
Love to.
But I thought, since, you know, Brian, you know, knows it, digs it kind of, but, you know, not, we could broaden it a bit and make it, you know, like cult, what's a cult film and what's, you know, what's like now mainstream cult, whatever. Like, I always use Buckaroo Banzai as an example for a license that if it sort of, you know, fell in my lap, I would jump on it because I'd love to do it. Mm-hmm. If it ends up, you know, costing the farm, I wouldn't, because I really think that audience is cult of cult.
Yeah, I agree.
Cult. It really is, you know. But there's a big following in the UK, and there's a new Blu-ray DVD over there, etc. And actually, when I met John Lithgow down at Comic-Con for Dexter, like 4 or 5 years, whatever it was, the first thing I said to him was, you know, I explained who I was and that we're making this thing. And he's like, oh, I'm so excited. And I said, but I'm not going to rest until one day I can get an Emilio Lazard. And he was so knocked out that I threw that at him, and he started doing the character. He did the voice, and he goes, oh, Bakuruban, you know, whatever. And I just love – that movie gets better every time I see it. But maybe we could have you back and do you know, launch with that in no order and talk about these cult things that get a slightly larger following once they
– You could do a Buckaroo Banzai, Remo Williams. You can kind of – you could fuse those two into an episode.
If you did that, I'd be talking one half of it, because I love Remo. Right. Yeah.
I love – that's a – Remo Williams is a great – I kind of like Fred Ward all around.
I've read all those Destroyer books too.
Yeah, that would have been a cool – I mean, is it racist? That'll be the topic of that episode. Is
Ooh,
it
Destroyer totally? Books are insanely racist.
Yeah, I just mean Joel Grey being the
– Oh.
Oh, the
– Yeah, the
– Yeah.
Hey, if you want to laugh, they did a TV pilot called Remo Williams, and Roddy McDowell is Chun. In the same makeup, late 80s.
Oof.
It's on YouTube. But
has anybody, without going into it, has anyone seen the Aziz Ansari show yet on Netflix?
I heard it's great.
Yeah.
He talks about that. Oh, they're still using white guys to play Indian characters today. In movies, and how pissed off he is about it.
Well, they're hard to get.
That's true. They're hard. It's hard to find Indian actors. It's a very small pool, small area. Yeah, but maybe we'll
comments to Jason Lenzi.
Yeah.
Why is this me? I was trying to say we got to be careful with Remo Williams because Joel Grey played like, you know, a Fu Manchu type character in that. And it was like 85 when that movie came out. I'm the good guy here.
That was one of the things critics really I'm giving away gold for this episode, but that's one of the things critics really lampooned too.
Oh yeah, they had, but didn't he get nominated for that? I swear. I thought out of nowhere he got some kind of nomination for a best supporting. I know he won for supporting for Cabaret.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian. The show got cut off early thanks to my crappy software. You can blame me. I'd like to thank Chris Tallman for being such an awesome guest, and, of course, Jason, as usual, for being my dazzling co-host. Thanks for listening, and you'll hear from us in the next couple of weeks with a brand new topic. Thanks. Take care.